This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9, entitled Prahlad Pacifies the Lord with Prayers, text number 28. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Evam Janam Nipatitam Prabhavahikupe. Kama bikamam anuya prapatam prasangat.
Kama bikamam anuya prapatam prasangat.
Kritvatmashat shurashina bhagavan grihita.
Kritvatmashat shurashina bhagavan grihita.
Soham katam nuvishije tava britya sevam. Translation, my dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my association with material desires, one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes, following the general populace. But your servant Narada Muni kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I ever leave his service? Purport. As will be seen in later verses, even though Prahlad Maharaj was directly offered all the benedictions he might have desired, he refused to accept such offerings from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the contrary, he asked the Lord to engage him in the service of his servant, Narad Muni. This is the symptom of a pure devotee. One should serve the spiritual master first. It is not that one should bypass the spiritual master and desire to serve the Supreme Lord. This is not the principle for a Vaishnava. Narottam Das Thakur says, Tandara charana sevi bhakti sanivas janame janame hoy e abilas. One should not be anxious to offer direct service to the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised that one become a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Gopi Bharatu Pada Kamalayor Das Anudas Das. This is the process for approaching the Supreme Lord. The first service should be rendered to the spiritual master so that by his mercy one can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead to render service. While teaching Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhaktilat Bij. One can achieve the seed of devotional service by the mercy of the Guru, the spiritual master, and then by the mercy of Krishna. This is the secret of success. First one should try to please the spiritual master, and then one should attempt to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also says, Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado. One should not attempt to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead by concoction. One must first be prepared to serve the spiritual master, and when one is qualified, he is automatically offered the platform of direct service to the Lord. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj proposed that he engage in the service of Narad Muni. He never proposed that he engaged directly in the service of the Lord. This is the right conclusion. Therefore he said, Soham katam nu vishije tavabritya sevyam. Quote, how can I give up the service of my spiritual master, who has favored me in such a way that I am now able to see you face to face? Prahlad Maharaj prayed to the Lord that he might continue to engage in the service of his spiritual master, Narada Muni. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my association with material desires one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes, following the general populace. But your servant, Narada Muni, kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How then could I ever leave his service? Om Agyan Timurandasya Genangana Shalakaya Chuksudimilitam Jainatasmaya Sigurdavena Maha Sri Chaitanya Marobishnam Shtapitam Jainabhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadantishva Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktivrindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 I was born into the darkness of material existence, but my spiritual master has opened my eyes with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. I offer my most respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet. So today we are accepting eight devotees as first initiates into our Brahma Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, and we are granting second initiation also to another eight devotees. 16 devotees today are taking their vows of initiation. And as we've discussed on a number of occasions, Prabhupada describes this initiation ceremony as like second birth. Our first birth is from the womb of our mother by dint of our fathers impregnating the mother. And generally, in 99.9% of the cases, that is a birth into ignorance. Why ignorance? Because we left Krishna to come to this material world. This material world is temporary, full of ignorance and suffering. Logic says that you should only give up something if you get something better. That's actually a quote from Niti Shastra by Chanaka Pandit. Intelligent person, he only gives up something if he gets something better. For example, if I have $100 and you have $10 and I say, you'd like to make an exchange? You go, what? And, oh, okay, are you willing? Yeah, then I give you the 100, you give me the 5. But if I have the 5 and you have the 100, and we make a switch, that's bad news for you. So logic says one should only give up something if someone gets something better. But we did the opposite in our cardinal sin, as the Christians say. The original sin was that we gave up Krishna, we gave up the spiritual world, which is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. For the contrary, the material world, which is temporary, full of ignorance and suffering. We gave up our freedom to serve the Lord of our heart, to come to this nasty place, the material world. Prabhupada was very eloquent. Eloquence is truth spoken concisely. He said, this material world is no place for a lady or a gentleman. I don't know, somehow that statement just struck a chord in my heart. Okay, I accept. Shastra describes this material world as Durga Dham. Dham means like place, and Durga, of course, personified, we mentioned her yesterday, Maya Devi. Durga also means prison. This material world is Durga Dham. It's compared to a prison. If you go outside today, it's Memorial Day. Or the weekend, this is Memorial Day. It's a nice, beautiful day out here in Dallas, Texas. But if you look to the eyes of Shastra, because a sadhu is seeing things not through his own imperfect vision, but he hears the words of Guru Shastra and sadhu, and he understands the reality. The reality is it's a prison. Because in a prison is characterized by the fact that there's four large walls, maximum security. And in an old prison, they were so high, you couldn't climb over. So also in this world, there's four insurmountable walls of material existence that no one can overcome, even by science, technology, advanced medicine, etc., ad infinitum. What are those high walls that none of us can conquer over? Whatever material qualification we have, their birth, their disease, old age, and death. No one to date, and we know no one in the future, will ever conquer over those walls of material existence by any mundane material process. We're in jail. You saw on the video the other day of our Brazilian tour, I don't know if you caught it, but we did a program in a prison. And it was one of the worst prisons in Brazil. These guys, they were like 120 of them, they were the most hardened criminals. Murderers, rapists, extortionists, kidnappers, torturers. They went to that prison. And we had to go through all these different gates to get into that prison. And there was no way to get out of there. That was maximum security. So in the same way, we're like prisoners. Now, those prisoners, they were identified by the particular dress they had. Prisoners are obliged to wear uniforms. There's a psychology behind that. But let us just say if they try to escape, you can spot them easily. I think in our penitentiary system here in America, they have bright orange suits. They used to wear the black and white stripes with the chain, the ball and chain. Now they have the bright orange. So if a prisoner escapes and he tries to go in downtown Dallas, whoa, it's either a Hare Krishna or a prisoner. So in the same way, when we left the spiritual world and came to the prison house of material existence, we also got a prison suit. Just look in the mirror. There it is. That's our prison suit. It's not orange or black and white stripes. It's the material body. In a sense that our sign of our independence from God is the material body. That's nothing to be proud about. A prisoner doesn't parade his orange suit with his number on the back. That would be foolish. But we foolishly parade. We're very proud of this material body. Actually, it's a sign of our independence, our rebellion against God. Nothing more, nothing less, this body. It's a sign, a symptom of our independence, our rejection of God. How you can be proud? Nothing wonderful about taking birth in this world. Actually, a Vaishnava, a Vaishnavi, they observe their birthday with sobriety. In Vedic culture, the true Vedic culture, when it was someone's birthday, they would observe the day with penance and austerity, and they would give charity. Of course, in ISKCON, in International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we do want to honor the Vaishnavas. So we do that. Of course, now it's kind of become a tradition. I don't really know if we did it when Prabhupada was here, but we would observe, nowadays we observe the birthday of a devotee. I think it would be better to honor that devotee on this day when they take their spiritual birth. Prabhupada, one lecture is entitled, Deathlessness Begins at Initiation. This is the day to honor a Vaishnava, when they take that determined vow that they will give up material existence altogether and become fully surrendered devotees of the Lord. That's to be noted. That's to be marked. That should be honored. This is a good day. This is my birthday. So those who are taking initiation today, tomorrow if someone asks you how old you are, you can say I'm one day old. Or better, one day young, one day on the path to eternity. So this birth, this second birth, what is the end result of this birth? The end result of the previous birth is described, material birth is described by the Lord very clearly in Bhagavad Gita. For one who takes his birth, death is certain. Palina Pradichate, you judge something by the result. Birth into this material existence means death. And Krishna says, and one who has died, birth is certain. The endless cycle of samsara. The repetition of birth and death. But what is the end result? Felina Parichate, let us judge with our intelligence. What is the end result of this birth that they are taking today, these initiates? Back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, there's a Bengali proverb. Janame, janame sabhe, pita matapaya, Krishna guru nahi mile bhajahari e. That everyone in this world gets a mom and a dad. But if one gets the benediction of Krishna and Guru, one can conquer the material energy and return back home, back to Godhead, by serving the Lord. Just as the material father places the seed of life into the womb of the mother, so the spiritual father gives us the opportunity for spiritual life by planting the seed of devotional service in our hearts at the moment of initiation. Or let us say he activates the seed. That's more clear understanding. The seed of bhakti, the bhakti lat bij, is there eternally within our hearts. It just becomes covered by many layers of material consciousness. But that bhakti lat bij is there. The spiritual master gives the process to awaken the seed through the watering process of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Yes, the seed is always there. Jivar Supoya Krishnara Nitya Das. Everyone's an eternal servant of Krishna. Sometimes you can't appreciate it in a germ or a bug or a wolf or a demoniac person, but it's there. It just has to be activated. It's dormant, just like the seeds in the warehouse or in the store. They come in the little cute little packets, and when spring comes, you want to plant a garden. So you go to the store and you buy a little pack of whatever type of seeds they are. They may have been sitting there for years and years. Nothing happens. They don't grow. But by nature's way, if you follow the authorized process of material life, if you take those seeds in the spring and you put them in the ground and you water them, lo and behold, within a few weeks or months, whatever, the seed germinates. So the seed of bhakti is there in our hearts, but it's dormant. The moment of initiation, the spiritual master blesses us. He blesses us. He authorizes us to chant Hare Krishna and get the full fruit of Krishna consciousness. Before initiation, one can chant Hare Krishna and get many benefits. You can get freedom from sinful reactions. Your material desires can be subdued or even destroyed to the root. But to get prema, to get love of God, which is the ultimate goal of life, you have to receive the mantra from a spiritual master in proper disciplic succession. Therefore, initiation is so essential. It's not enough just to get freedom from sinful reactions. It's not enough just to uproot the material desires. That's like getting rid of the disease. More important is active life after hospital. You're in the hospital, you get free from the disease. Oh, okay, that's something. But now enjoy the real life. Leave the hospital and live your normal existence, your normal life. So all glories to the holy name, which destroys the sinful karma, which uproots the material desires. But the real glory, this is discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in reference to Haridasa Thakur, who describes the real glory of the holy name is that it awakens ecstatic love for God. But to get that, you have to get the mantra at your initiation. It's a transcendental phenomena. You may not see it in the whole process, svaha, the banana, this, but there's an amazing transformation taking place in the heart. You are authorized to chant Hare Krishna to achieve the ultimate goal of life, prema. O Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain. I'm feeling all vacant in the world in your absence. This is the goal. We should never lose sight of the goal of Krishna consciousness in the midst of all our various of the process, we should remember that the ultimate goal is that one day we will sit down and we'll chant, and a tear will manifest from our eye due to the purification of our heart and roll down our cheek. This is perfection of life. Nothing more, nothing less. So that seed is activated by the spiritual master. Brahmanda Brahmati Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasad Bhai Bhakti Lat Bij. The living entity, since he left the spiritual world, he's been aimlessly wandering through material existence from one Brahmananda to another Brahmananda to another, one universe to the next, one species of life, one body. But somehow, if he gets causeless mercy, if he comes in contact with Guru and Krishna, he can activate the seed of devotional service and go back home, back to Godhead. That is the greatest fortune. Knowing that, intelligent people in Vedic culture would naturally search out a bona fide spiritual master. Prabhupada said, in a civilized culture, everyone has a bona fide spiritual master. That's civilized culture. Everyone has a guru. Knowing the ultimate goal of life. Everyone has a guru in a civilized Aryan culture. So the parents would direct the student to the Gurukul. If that was not there at some point in one's life, one would make the effort to find the shelter of a bona fide Vaishnava guru and seek his guidance. But this is Kali Yuga, and we have forgotten all these things. So the spiritual master very kindly finds us. No one asked Srila Prabhupada to come to the West. On the order of his guru and out of his infinite compassion, he came looking for us. Therefore, one of Shivaram Maharaj's disciples, Gurungi Dasi, realizing this principle, how it's vice versa, topsy-turvy, upside down, backwards to forwards in Kali Yuga. She said, Guru Maharaj, she said in her Vyasa Puja offering, it's taken you so long to find me. Please never kick me away. I loved it when she said it. I learned something very deep from that, Vaishnavi. Guru Maharaj, it took you so long to find me. Please never kick me away. So rare to come in contact with a devotee who knows our real interest, who knows the real interest of our heart, and will do anything and everything, tolerate us, wait patiently for us, prod us, chastise us, bless us, even birth after birth if required, to fulfill his responsibility, the guru's responsibility at the moment of initiation, to take the disciple back home, back to Godhead. It's a contract. It evolves into a very intimate, loving relationship, of course, but actually, Prabhupada said in Bhagavad Gita, friendly talks are discontinued. It's a formal relationship between guru and disciple. So one must seek out the shelter of such a bona fide teacher and consider oneself very fortunate that someone has discovered us. Someone has discovered us. Therefore, Chanaka Pandit, he says, consider it like this. There does not exist a ruby in every mountain, nor a pearl on the head of every elephant, nor are there sandalwood trees to be found in every forest, nor will you meet a sadhu in every birth. I love that verse. I quote it very often, but it's ever fresh. There does not exist a ruby in every mountain, a pearl on the head of every elephant, sandalwood trees in Texas, or neither do you meet a sadhu in every birth. So if you find a ruby in the mountain, take it. If you're riding an elephant and there's one of those special pearls that manifests from his head, the time of rutting, take it. I saw one of those pearls one time. They're very rare. I met one sadhu in South India at Tirupati. And he showed this pearl, which if you get this pearl, your wealth becomes equal to the wealth of the Indra, the king of heaven. And sandalwood trees, they don't even hardly exist anymore because they're not so profitable. So in places like Malaysia, where they used to be lots of, they're cutting them down now for rubber trees. And how much less chance one has to meet a sadhu, because generally one has to perform punya, pious activity, in order to come in contact with a sadhu. So if one meets, one should consider oneself very, very fortunate. Very fortunate. And what is the good fortune that we can obtain from a spiritual master? Essentially, the mercy that we receive from a Vaishnava personality is that he teaches us how to get out of the material world and into the spiritual world. That's the process. Two things we lecture about. If you take all the devotees who lecture in Krishna consciousness and you hear and you think, well, there's basically two subjects. It's very simple. Every devotee has a certain verses they chant, the shlokas, and their analogies and their stories and their way of presentations are different spiritual masters and leaders in Krishna consciousness and devotees speaking. But basically, it comes down to two things. What is material life? What is spiritual life? How to get out of material life and how to get back to the spiritual world. These are the things we learn from our spiritual master. Like Rupa Goswami prays so nicely in his Padyavali. O Lord, I am drowning in the painful, fathomless whirlpool of material existence. O Lord, O friend of those who have no shelter, O effulgent moon of mercy, please, just this one time, won't you extend your hand to save me? When I first read that verse in Padyavali many years ago, a mental picture, a beautiful picture of Prabhupada just came into my mind. Oh Lord, I am drowning in the painful, fathomless whirlpool of material existence, of repeated birth and death. Oh Lord, O friend of those who have no shelter, O effulgent moon of mercy, please, just this one time, won't you extend your hand to save me? So what is that extension of the Lord's mercy for the devotee who's crying for freedom from material existence, who's crying for eternal servitorship in the spiritual world? He's asking the Lord to extend his hand to save him, and Krishna does that. He says, for my devotee, I'm the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. And there's a picture of Vishnu coming down on Garuda and the devotee drowning in the ocean of material existence with his shaven head and his sika reaching up, and Krishna's reaching down. It's a little bit of a poetic description, but we could take it more literally. What is the extension of the Lord's hand taking his devotee out of material existence? It's his representative, the spiritual master, Sakshat Hari. The spiritual master is Krishna's representative. That's the extension of it. If you want to know, oh, does Krishna know I exist? Does Krishna know that I live in the... Yes, if you have a bona fide spiritual master, Krishna sent you that guru to deliver you from material existence. So we are suffering in this painful material world, and the only solution is to meet Krishna's representative, follow his instructions, and go back home, back to Godhead. A person who is satisfied to remain in this painful condition of material existence is mad. There's more pain and suffering, although we say often in our public lectures to introduce people to Krishna consciousness, to free them from the illusion that they're happy here. We say, ladies and gentlemen, let us consider the real nature of this world for a moment with all your plans. It is, after all, a world of duality. Up and down, left and right, boy and girl, black and white, heat and cold, happiness. In Brazil, I was saying, you got a lot of happiness. You got 8,000 miles of beaches in your country. But it's also distress. Like two sides of a coin. You've got heads and tails. You can't have heads without having tails. You can't have happiness without having distress. No, not me. Because happiness is temporary. The end result is distress. So it may last a minute, it may last 100 years, but it's going to be finished at the moment of death, everything. So as much as you are attached to something, you will experience the anxiety of separation when it leaves you. So that is this world. So I say 50-50, I tell the people. It's an introductory lecture. One time Prabhupada said, the conception of good and bad is wrong. It's all bad. This is the Acharya speaking. The concept of good and bad in this world, it's wrong. There's no good. It's all bad. We can say in our Srimad Bhagavatam classes, Bhagavad Gita classes are for public, so we say 50-50. But amongst ourselves, we know that real happiness begins when one takes to spiritual life, begins when one takes to Krishna consciousness. So actually, there's more ways to suffer than there are to enjoy in this world. Makes you think, why maintain my material attachments? I already tried, been there, done that, didn't work. Let me fully surrender to the process of Krishna consciousness. Just like your hand. How many ways are there your hand can enjoy? I don't know. I guess if you pick up the gulab or something, you know. How many ways are the hand can suffer? Someone can slam your door, slam the door on your hand. You can burn it. You can freeze it. You can rip the skin. You can bruise it. I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but. And what is the relief? Oh, you put the burned hand, some cream on it, the cold hand, you warm it up, you stitch up the cut, you put some cream on the... That's the pleasure. And therefore, Prabhupada concluded that what is pleasure in this world? It's a temporary relief from the suffering, painful condition. That's what we take as pleasure. You're hitting someone, stop. Ecstasy. Hello? Not ecstasy. It's just temporary relief from a painful condition. So it is stated that an intelligent man and woman, Brahmana and Brahmani, they cannot tolerate two things. A Brahmana cannot tolerate a place where there's no water. And therefore, Brahmins don't take birth in the deserts. Only sinful people take birth in deserts as a result of their past activities. A Brahmana cannot live, he cannot be peaceful, he cannot be comfortable in a place where there's no water, and a situation where he must endure pain. He's in the mode of goodness, so he's very sensitive. If he gets some pain, devotees don't like to go to the dentist. And this is the characteristics, some characteristics of a Brahmin. No water. Why? Because Suchinam, Brahman's always very clean. You cannot think of Krishna unless you live in a clean situation, unless your heart is clean, and for all practical matters, unless your environment is clean. You go to the house of a Brahmana, Prabhupada said, a place for everything, everything in its place. Sometimes my disciples request second initiation, and I secretly... or whatever, I invite myself for prasadam to their house for a specific purpose, not to eat, but to see if they're Brahmanas, to see if there is a place for everything and to see if everything is in its place. And I go along the windowsills and I rub my finger like this. Gurudev, what is the qualification for Brahman initiation? No dust on the windowsill. You cannot. Just like I remember Prabhupada's sister, Pishima. She was Brahmini. She was Brahmini Vaishnavi. And she used to carry a little bottle of, was it Ganges water, Maharaj? Ganges water. And I remember the first time I saw her, she was a big woman. She came to sit someplace and she put the Ganges water down before sitting. I thought, that's interesting. And then she sat. I think Prabhupada was speaking and giving a darshan. And then afterwards she got up. And again, she cleansed the place before she left. She was such a humble Vaishnavi. I always remembered that. Creating an atmosphere of auspiciousness, of course, because of the Ganga Jal, but just the principle of a Brahman, Suchinam, he has to be very clean. Prabhupada said, a Brahmana, he wrote one of my godbrothers, Sri Govinda, in Chicago in the early years, in a letter, he said, a Brahman is so clean that after drinking water, he washes his hands. I also learned a lot from that. How to be clean. I learned cleanliness from one of my dear godbrothers, Bhakti Bringo Govinda Maharaj. He's a fanatic. And it's okay to be a fanatic in Krishna consciousness. They say too much of a good thing is not good, but that doesn't apply in Krishna consciousness. You can't say too much of chanting Hare Krishna is not good. No, unlimitedly. So he's a fanatic for cleanliness. And, you know, when I became friends with him, he used to get on my case, you know. And I've learned to live in a clean atmosphere, clothes, possessions, the room, everything clean. When I arrive, I spend a long time cleaning. And when I leave, I also clean before I leave. I always organize. Because then, in that atmosphere of goodness, which is a stepping stone to transcendence, then you can think of Krishna, Shuddha Sattva. Krishna consciousness is not just about sattva or goodness, but goodness is essential as a platform for coming to Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. So as we rise from tamas, ignorance, to passion, goodness, to passion to rajas, to passion, to sattva, to goodness, so we also are meant to step into Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, by becoming devotees of God and living in a godly atmosphere, like this temple. And a Brahman is known by the fact that he cannot tolerate pain. He cannot tolerate this painful material existence, so he's always looking for a solution, how to get out of material existence. Kshatriyas, they can tolerate pain. When they're on the battlefield, they can't be wimps. If they get a bruise or a cut or even a broken arm, they have to go on fighting. That's their dharma. In fact, as we have our emblems, our kuntimala and our tilak and our sikas and our hair tied back as matajis, and we have our, you know, paraphernalia. A kshatriya is only considered a kshatriya if he's got scars. Means he was in the battle and he was defending dharma. They'll have a scar here, a scar there. You know, this is the natural, not like tattoos. You just get it. Like, to go out, you have to earn it. So they can tolerate pain. Brahman, he can't tolerate. That's a symptom. He can't tolerate this painful material existence. He wants relief from it. He wants liberation, mukti. He wants to go back home, back to Godhead. That's a brahmana. He cannot tolerate pain. There's a nice story in this connection, which Prabhupada told one time. It concerns one kshatriya called Karna. Karna was actually one of the greatest kshatriyas who ever lived. He was a great challenge, actually, to Arjuna. And one time, in the guise of a brahmana, he went to Parashurama, who's, of course, an incarnation of the Lord, to learn more about the art of warfare. Now, he appeared not as a kshatriya, appeared as a brahmana to learn from Parasurama, because, as you know, Parasurama, he didn't like kshatriyas at that time. In fact, he destroyed, I think it was 17 generations, because they were misbehaving, like modern-day politicians. You know, they tax the people, and they give maybe 1% back, and 99% goes in their pocket, or a Swiss bank account, or they're having lovely affairs in a hotel someplace in, you know, New York City, or, you know. He became upset. The world became overburdened by these kings who were actually sudras and misbehaving. So off with your heads. He didn't like kshatriyas. But he was a powerful warrior, Parasurama, incarnation of God as a warrior. So if you want to learn about, you know, war, the art of war, then go to Krishna's incarnation as Parasurama, but don't go as a kshatriya. So Karna, he disguised himself as brahmana. It was a little difficult because these kshatriyas, you know, they're like 6'5" and big, broad shoulders, thin waist, muscular legs, scars. You can tell a kshatriya. Brahmanas are, you know, not that tall, kind of fair skin because they're home studying all the time, eating the mahaprasad. They got a little belly like Ganesh. They don't try for the, what do they call that, sick packs? Huh? You have a belly like with muscles. It's not into that. They're not into their bodies. They're proud of their belly. I'm brahmana. You give me some. You're feeding me. You're feeding God. Come some. So he was kshatriya. So he had to wear the robes. He had to disguise himself, and he came to Parasrama Sur. I am brahmana, but I need to learn the art of warfare, because sometimes when it's emergency, Brahmanas may take up, if there's extreme emergency, they may take up other occupations. Specifically, they may sometimes have to become Kshatriyas. It's rare, but they may have to do. These are the two higher orders of society, Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. So he came dressed as a Brahmana and said, "Sir, is emergency, can I learn from you?" So Parasrama said, "Yes." And every day, and he was very carefully keeping his disguise. But one day, after some intense martial arts training, Parasrama said, the Lord said, "I'm tired, I'm fatigued, I need to take a little rest. So you are my humble disciple. You sit there and I will put my head on your lap and take a nap." So the intimacy here, the master put his head on the lap of his disciple, Parasrama, and he fell asleep. And Karna, in the guise of a Brahmana, sat there as Guru Maharaj was sleeping. But suddenly one very dangerous insect came and landed on the thigh of Karna. And that insect, the nature of that insect, it was boring through his thigh, eating his flesh through, and the blood was pouring from his leg. Karna could tolerate because he was Kshatriya. These things are not unknown to Kshatriyas. They tolerate. They have to tolerate the pain of battle for the higher purpose of protecting the innocent. They're warriors, not like boys that we send into battle now, but these are real Kshatriyas. So he stood there and he bore the pain. And the insect went all the way through, ate through his flesh and flew away. He didn't want to move because he didn't want to disturb his Guru Maharaj, Parasrama, his martial arts teacher. So he thought, "Oh, I am doing the right thing." After some time, Parasrama woke up and he looked around and he saw the blood flowing. And he saw the hole in Karna's leg. He took out his chopper. "Off with your head, you rascal." Karna said, "Guru Maharaj, I'm your humble Brahminical disciple. You're not a Brahmin." "No Brahmin could tolerate the pain of an insect boring through his thigh. You must be a Kshatriya." And he chased him out of the ashram. And Karna fled, of course, and survived. So like this, a Kshatriya can tolerate pain, but a Brahmin can't tolerate pain. And really this indicates he cannot tolerate the painful condition of material existence altogether. So he looks for a solution. If you're in pain and you don't look for a solution, you're a fool. Of course, I did that one time. I tolerated a painful condition and paid the price. I was in Russia in the early years. It was 1992. And I had one of those impacted tooths, you know, an abscess tooth. I got an abscess tooth. And they took me to the dentist. This is 1992. Russian dentist. You know, like they use chainsaws and hammers. And you know, you see the hammer and sickle on the flag? That's what the guy had. He had a sickle and a hammer. So I sat down in the chair. I mean, exaggerating, but not much. He had these pliers and he had this thing and it was all rusty. And I said, "You going to give any Novocaine?" He said, "What is that?" "Excuse me? What is the Novocaine?" "Goodbye." And it got worse and worse. And finally, when I got back to England, they had to pull my tooth out. So bad. So it's not good to tolerate a painful condition. It leads to more misery. So we are in a painful condition. You may be, you know, the elite of Dallas, and I've seen those houses and the cars, and, you know, you may have everything. But, sir, you're also subjected to birth, disease, old age, and death. You're in a painful condition. If you don't make a solution for it, it's going to get worse. There's no guarantee you'll take birth in Dallas again. You may take birth in Ecuador as a monkey in the forest or something. You have to recognize the painful condition. That's a sign of intelligence. Sometimes people become distressed, they become in anxiety, they become psychotic because they actually see, "Oh, this material world is a horrible place." And people think it's a weakness. It's a sign of intelligence. Krishna says to be aware of the fragile nature of this world of birth, disease, old age, and death. That's a sign of intelligence. And you have to find a solution. So how do you find the solution? You go to the spiritual master who teaches you how to get out of the material into the blissful world which is eternal, full of knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Shastra says, Tvamnasandashito dattara dushtanam nishtitirshatam kalim satvam harampum sham karnadari varanam. This is a verse that you'll find on the tongue of every preacher, ready to be spoken. Just some verses are there on the tongue of all stalwart preachers. We think we have met your goodness, the sages of Naimasharanya say to Suta Goswami, who just appeared in their midst, as all mystically. Sir, we think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship. For those who desire to cross over this difficult ocean of Kali, which kalim satvam haram pum sham, haram means to kill, which deteriorates all the good qualities of men. This is the first verse I ever heard in Krishna consciousness. We had met His Holiness Vishwanjan Swami on the lawn of the university in Ann Arbor. And he said to us, we were standing there just with our mouths open, this effulgent personality sent to rescue us by Krishna. And he said, let me sit down and I will tell you about my spiritual master. Then he quoted that verse. We think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship. For those who desire to cross over the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a man. That's the guru can lead us out. So therefore, again, every intelligent person should have a bona fide spiritual master. Only a fool wants to stay in this painful condition. If we don't follow guru out of material existence, we will follow gauru into material existence. Guru means guru, and gauru is another name for cow. Sometimes in the old days, devotees would chant, Bande Gaurav Shri Charanaravind. I said, what are you chanting? You're going to follow your cow? It's Bande Guru Shri, not Gaurav Shri. Bhakti Sananda Saraswati once told the story. He said a man was wanting to go to his ancestral village, but he didn't know how to get there. So he asked one person, a cow herdsman on the road, how do I get this place? And the cowherdsman said, oh, that's my village. That's where I come from. You just hold the tail of this cow and she'll take you there. So the pilgrim grabbed onto the tail of the cow and the coward man slapped the backside of that cow and that cow started running. Ooh. And the coward man said, hold on, you're going home. So he held on. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati tells a story. And he went through the hill and over dale into the ford, into the river, and the brickles and the brambles. And by the time he got home, he was all cut up and bruised and bleeding. And so he told that story that if you hold on to Guru, to the cow, but we have to hold on to Guru, the lotus feet of our spiritual master. He won't drag us through material existence. He'll lead us singing, dancing, and enjoying Hari Katha and Krishna Prasadam. He'll lead us to the beautiful, blissful path of devotional service back home, back to Godhead. Actually, he doesn't just lead us in that sense. It's not that by having a spiritual master that we're necessarily, he doesn't just deliver us. We have to follow his process. Any more than having a science teacher means that you know science. You have to go to the class, you have to learn, and you have to apply. So the essence of our relationship with our spiritual master is that we learn from him and we apply his teachings. Tadvidi paripatena paripashana sevaya upadekshanti teginam ganinas tatvidarshana. We must approach a spiritual master and what? Paripashana sevaya. They can turn the AC back on. It's getting a little hot here. Paripashana sevaya. Paripashana means, sir, who am I? Where have I come from? What happens at the moment of death? What is the goal of life? What is God? These are the kind of questions we should be asking, not, where's the newspaper? What time CNN on? How to pay the bill? How am I going to get it? No, we should be intelligent. These are the questions we should be asking. And then he speaks, and then, paripashana sevaya. Seva means you take the knowledge the guru gives you and you work with it. Like you work with the knowledge you get in school, or you work with the tools that your master gives you to do the specific service that you're doing, a plumber or an architect or something. We don't just get entertained in class. We're not here to get entertained. Oh, that was a good class. There were lots of nice stories. Okay. This is serious business, Krishna consciousness. We hear with attentiveness because we want to solve the problems. We don't want to suffer anymore. We hear what the spiritual master says, and we walk out of the room, sevaya. We take it and we utilize it. If you don't have a good memory, you have to have a good tape recorder so that when you get home, you can hear the class again or ask somebody, what was that Guru Maharaj said? I don't know. Let's listen to our iPods. I saw a couple on the plane yesterday. They were sitting next to me. Actually, I was sitting in the middle, again, one of the situations, and they were sitting here and one here, and they were so funny because he put on something. I didn't want to hear what it was. He put on something, and he passed over around me. He passed the second earphone to his wife. And it was like running on my neck. I was like really tolerant, you know? And they were like... So we have to take the knowledge we hear from our spiritual master, and we have to apply it, his instructions, whatever the instruction may be. Of course, the most important instruction, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare. In the course of devotional service, we receive many instructions, but some of them are essential instructions. There's perfect, more perfect, and let's say like that. They're all perfect instructions, but there's perfect, there's more perfect, and there's most perfect. There's Dwarka, there's Mathura, and there's Vrindavan. So we have many instructions, but we should never compromise on the most essential instructions. You have many things you have to do in life, but don't stop breathing. Because if you stop breathing, you can't do anything else. So if you stop chanting Hare Krishna, no matter what else you're doing and maybe doing in devotional service, you're not going to get the ultimate goal. You have to always chant. It's like in the beginning, Prabhupada basically just asked the devotees to chant. In fact, in the old days, kirtan was in unison. I don't know, maybe Giriraj Maharaj was around at that time, but I was told by Gargamuni last Kartik when I was in Vrindavan. I went to speak with him. He said in 26 Second Avenue, in the beginning, it was all a kirtan in unison. Everyone was singing, Prabhupada was singing, all the devotees were singing Hare Krishna at the same time. There wasn't leading and responding. Then Prabhupada introduced backwards and forwards. And that was it. There was Prabhupada's lecture, there was kirtan, and there was apple prasadam. Went on for a long time. And one day, Umapati, Prabhu, who later became Umapati Maharaj, he went to Prabhupada's room and he said, Prabhupada, this is wonderful, chanting and your lectures and apples. He said, are there any other rules and regulations we should follow? And Prabhupada said, I thought you would never ask. And then came that famous paper, which has been, you know, copied hundreds of thousands of times, which you find on the wall of the Brahmacharya Brahmacharya ashrams in the temples. Prabhupada said, the rules and regulations for living in the temple. The four rules that the devotees were promised today and the regulations and chanting like that. But actually the most important is the chanting because it's the most powerful. So powerful, Shastra says, that even a person who is a low-born dog eater can become an exalted Vaishnava by the mystic potency of this mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Not to have faith that the holy names can purify even the most sinful person actually means not to have faith in the Lord himself. Because Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. There's no difference between Krishna and his name. How powerful are these names that we find in the little bead bags? Again, they free us from karmic reactions. They uproot material desires. They awaken love of God. It's no small thing. In past, previously, people would do prayaschitya. They would perform atonement for previous sinful activities, for reactions, their whole life. The whole life was just to get free from the karma. Or they would perform penance and austerities to free themselves of material desires. But love of God, that was very rare. Manushanam sahasresu kaschidyatati siddhaye yatatam apisiddhanam kastyamvam vetitatvata. Very rarely achieved. And that verse was spoken in Dwapara Yuga. What about Kali Yuga? But Lord Chaitanya is so kind. Namo Mahabhananaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gurudas. He's the most merciful incarnation, that those who are the most fallen can achieve the highest result by chanting Hare Krishna. Kriteya Dayato Vishnum Tretayam Yajato Makai Dwapare Paricharyayam Kolotad Dari Kirtanat. That's a nice verse for Shloka Wallace, like Dravida Prabhu. Whatever result was obtained in Satya Yuga by meditating on Vishnu, in Treta Yuga by performing sacrifice, in Dwapara Yuga by serving the Lord's lotus feet, can be obtained very quickly in Kali Yuga by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare. It's a special opportunity. Who's not? What foolish person would not take advantage? Or what intelligent person would not take advantage? Like after big holidays, I don't know if this is Memorial Day, but it's not really a shopping, but like holidays like Christmas and Easter, they have sales and people run to the stores because things are cheaper and easier. The same thing that, you know, 3 days ago was very expensive suddenly becomes obtainable for practically nothing, just some pennies. So people knowing that, they wait until the holiday's over, then they go to the store and they buy. Prabhupada said, just like demigods, they're on the higher planets, they're praying to take birth in Kali Yuga. Because the process of spiritual enlightenment is so easy as compared to other ages. They wait. Now, I'm not going down there in Satya Yuga. What do you mean? I'm waiting for Kali Yuga. What? Yeah, because Mahaprabhu's taking birth. And all I have to do is chant, dance, little Hare Katha, and feast on Bhagavad Prasadam. So it's like the sale. So we Kali Yuga is like a permanent sale of the holy name. So everyone should be running to the ISKCON stores. I don't mean your little store out here in the corner. Here, in front of your beautiful deities, and beg for the mercy of the holy names in front of your deities. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. And the result was your whole life will become like Jubilant Festival. We're experiencing a festival now. It's so nice. It's a 3-day event. I love those festivals. You know, the 1-day ones, they're here today and gone tomorrow. These are 3-day events. This is, you know, after the first day, I was exhausted. I thought, oh, wow, we have a program tomorrow, too. And last night I got home and I was really exhausted. I woke up, wow, another day of festivals. And I dragged myself to the car and got here. It's so nice. And as we said in our introductory talk in Krishna Consciousness, every day is a festival. So we can experience that jubilant atmosphere wherever we go just by invoking the presence of the Lord. All auspiciousness is invoked with the presence of the Lord. Inauspiciousness means to the degree that we get further away from the Lord. And auspiciousness means anything which brings us closer into the association. Just like you go closer to the sun, you get heat and warmth, or you get light and heat, and you go further away, it gets cold and dark. So the closer we come, auspicious activities bring us closer to Krishna, the personality of, and inauspicious activities take us away. So we could always be in Krishna's jubilant, festive atmosphere of Vrindavan by invoking his presence anywhere and everywhere by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So again, in conclusion, Rupa Goswami concludes in his Padyavali. It's not the concluding verse, but he makes a conclusion of this wonderful process of chanting Hare Krishna, of which some of you are being initiated into today. He says, Lord, now that we have become your devotees, your holy names have affectionately created a jubilant festival in our mouths. Your bodily splendor, like a dark rain cloud, has become the black ointment of our eyes, and the music of your flute has become the ornament of our ears. We no longer take pleasure in material desires, O Lord. O mighty Lord, material desires no longer appear beautiful to us. By dint of this wonderful process given to us by Lord Chaitanya and brought to the West by Srila Prabhupada, chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Nama, Hare Nama. Shri Prahlad Maharaj ki, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Golok Premdan Harinam Sankirtan Yagya ki, Srinam Prabhu ki, Shri Guru Parampara ki, back home, back to Godhead ki, take all the fallen conditioned souls with us ki, Go Premanande! Hare Krishna.